Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is November the 18th. We are in Treyasa, we're in Malachi. We are in the second perek, second chapter. Last thing we ended off with was that Hashem was admonishing the Jewish people as a whole, particularly the Kohanim, because of their conduct in the Beis HaMikdash, in the types of karbanos they were allowing in. We talked about mitzvah haba'a ba'aveira, and how the Kohanim were allowing in karbanos that were not necessarily appropriate. So now we continue in that vein, and I just want to remind everybody that what we're reading right now is the Haftorah for this week. The Haftorah for this week begins with the beginning of the first parak, and it continues into the second parak, a few psukim. I'll tell you where it ends when we get to it. So we are right now in the middle of the Haftorah for this coming week. Ve'ata now, aleichem ha-mitzvah hazav sakoanim. The mitzvah is on you, the Kohanim. What I'm telling you about right now, it's all about you, the Kohanim. You're the ones who need to correct the problem. Im lo sishmu, if you don't listen, v'im lo sasimu al leiv, and if you don't take to heart, lo says kavod lishmi, to bring honor to my name, amar Hashem tzvakos as Hashem, v'shilachti v'chem es ha-me'ira, I will send against you the curse. Va'orosi es birchoseichem, and I will curse that which you need a bracha for. So Chazal explained what is a bracha needed for? For food, for growing, for the crops to grow properly, it's essential that there be a bracha, and Hashem says instead, there will be a curse. V'gam arosiha, and in fact, I'm going to curse it right now because ki einchem samim alev. Because even as I'm speaking, you're not taking it to heart. You would think as long as the Navi is saying it, at least the people would say to themselves, well, we need to improve, and then maybe they'll fall down on the job later. But the Navi is saying, Hashem is saying, I see right now that you're not even taking it to heart as I speak. So Hashem says, therefore I will put the curse in place even as I speak now. Hinani go'er lachem es hazera, behold, I am going to, go'er usually means to yell at, or to scream at, but it means over here that I'm going to chase away the zera, I'm going to chase away the crops. Vizerisi feresh al pneichem, I will scatter peresh on your faces, peresh chageichem, the peresh of your parties. What is peresh? Peresh means, it can mean a few things, but it generally means, it could, in this context, it means dung of the animals. It could mean the guts of an animal, and when you shecht an animal, and that's, but it's, whatever it is, it's a disgusting thing. So I'm going to scatter that on your faces. I'm going to scatter that of your parties, meaning you're shechting animals, and you think you're doing a good thing, and I'm not interested in them, says Hashem. Instead, I'm going to scatter it on you. V'nasa eschem a love, and it will, the perish, this, the dung of the animals will carry you to it. In other words, you're going to be drawn to this thing rather than, it being the way it's supposed to be. That it's a gift to Hashem, or it's some sort of a mitzvah. Instead, it's going to be a negative thing. Chazal tell us, what does it mean, peresh chageichem? Your parties? So Chazal say, this is referring to people who spend their days with making a party rather than learning Torah. That's what it's referring to. So those people who are not focused on Torah, so says the Navi that Hashem is going to reject their their karbanos. Pasuk Dalet, I'm sorry, Mr. Schwartz, did you ask something? No. Okay. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Vidatem ki shilachti aleichem es hamitzvah hazos, and you should know that I've sent to you this mitzvah, lios brisi es Levi, that my covenant should be with Levi, amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem, Tzvakos says Hashem. So now the Navi is going to turn the conversation a little bit and move it to to where things should be. They weren't behaving properly, but Hashem says, what I really want is to reinstate my covenant with Levi. You know, Hashem has a very special covenant with Levi, the Levim, the Kohanim, because of everything that happens in the Chumash. And Hashem says, what I want is that covenant should be reinstated, that you, the Levim, the Kohanim, should behave as you have in the past, and then I should respond to you the way that I have in the past. Brisi ha'isa ito, my bris, my covenant was with him, with the Levim, really with Aaron, the Kohen, ha'chayim v'ha'shalom, the life and the peace, v'et neim lo mora, and I gave them to him as fear, in other words, as fear of Hashem, v'yi ra'eni, and he feared me, u'mipnei shemi nichasu, and before my name, he nichas means to lower or humble oneself. He lowered his head before my name. As a side point, the Gemara Maseches Brachos tells us that when one bows during Shmona Esrei, so we know we bow in four places in Shmona Esrei, so we bow for the words Baruch Atah, but for the word Hashem, we're supposed to pick ourselves back up again, that we stand straight for Hashem's name, not to remain bent over for Hashem's name. The Gemara there points out this pasuk, "Umtei shemi nichasu," and before my name, he is humbled or bent over. It sounds like one should bend at Hashem's name. It seems contradictory to the Gemara. So the Gemara explains, no, it's not at Hashem's name that we bow, but rather mipnei shemi, before my name. Before you get to my name in the bracha, you should bow. Baruch atah, you should bow, but then come back up straight for Hashem's name. That's a side point about this pasuk. The Gemara also says, and the Medrash elaborates, that the bracha that Hashem gives to Levi and to the Kohanim, because of this bris, is chayim and shalom. Chayim, of course, is life, and shalom. And shalom, we know, that's the bracha that Hashem has with Pinchas. It says, Hinanino, St. Lois, Brisi, shalom. I give him my covenant of peace. And we know that Aaron stood for peace. He was Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. He loved peace. He sought, he chased after peace. Shalom is the hallmark of the Kohanim. And that's the bracha Hashem gives the Kohanim. And we move to Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Toras emes haisa v'fihu. It was a Torah of emes that was in his mouth, talking about Aaron. The avla alonim tzavis fasav, and there was no iniquity in his lips. B'shalom uv'mishor halach iti. He went with me with peace and with, I guess that's righteousness. V'rabim heshiv me'avon, and many people he turned away from sin. He brought people away from sin. The Medrash tells us, how did Aaron bring people away from sin? Aaron did kiruv. He got people who were sinning to stop sinning. How did he do it? So the Gemara tells us, that, again, the Medrash elaborates, that Aaron, if he would know that someone was doing averos, he would make sure to meet up with the person in the marketplace, outside. He would make sure to walk in an area where he would bump into the person. And he would give the person shalom. He'd say good morning, smile at the person, say hello, engage him in conversation. And then he would go on his way. Wouldn't say a word about the person's behavior. The Gemara says the next time the person was confronted with the Avera, and because of they were habitually involved in this Avera, they were ready to do it again, the person would stop themselves and say, how could I do this Avera? how could I do this Aveira and then meet up with Aaron, the great Aaron HaKohen? Aaron HaKohen just spoke to me, said hello to me. How could I lower myself and do this Aveira? And then how would I be able to face him? I'd be shamed to face Aaron again. And because he now had a relationship with Aaron, he couldn't bring himself to do the Aveira again. So Aaron would give the person the strength he needed to break away from his Yetzer Hara, not by lecturing him. He didn't even bring it up. Just by relating to him. Just by meeting with him. Just by saying hello. The person just felt a connection to Aaron HaKohen, and then he couldn't bring himself to do an Aveira like that again. That's one way he would take people away from Averos. Another way that he would take people away from Averos is, and this is perhaps the more famous way, is when people were in a fight. When two people were angry with each other, whether it was friends, whether it was neighbors, whether it was family members, spouses, they were fighting with each other and they were angry with each other, Aaron would make sure to meet up with each of them. He'd meet up with one of them and he would say, the person, why are you upset? The person would tell him, he would say, listen, I know you're upset, but I'm telling you, the person you're upset at, if he met with Reuven, he would say, Reuven Shimon is so distraught that he's in a fight with you. He feels so bad about what he did, and he's beating himself up. He's so upset. He just feels terrible. And the Medrash says, Aaron wouldn't leave until the person he was talking to would say, okay, you know what? I don't want to be in this fight anymore. I forgive him. He wouldn't let go. He wouldn't walk away until Reuven would say that he also feels bad about the fight. Then, of course, he would go to Shimon and do the same thing. And he would say, Reuven feels so terrible. And again, he wouldn't walk away from Shimon until Shimon also was ready to give up not digging his heels anymore. And then the Medrash continues and says, when Reuven and Shimon would meet each other, they would hug each other, they would kiss each other, and they would make up with each other, and they wouldn't be in a fight anymore. But the fact that he wouldn't let go, he would just deal with it. Now you understand, and everybody's dealt with a person who's been very, very upset. And as we all know, it's not easy to get that person to shift their focus and to shift their way of thinking of things. And you can't just repeat yourself over and over again. You gotta say it one way, say it another way, come at it from a different angle, right? Aaron just kept at it. If one approach didn't work, he tried another approach, and he just kept doing it. Some asked the question that, how could Aaron do this? Wasn't he lying? In other words, the second person that he went to, when he got to Shimon, he had already spoken to Reuven, and Reuven had already come around. So then Aaron is telling the truth when he says to Shimon, oh, Reuven feels so bad, because Reuven did feel so bad at that point. But how could he go to Reuven and tell him that Shimon feels bad when Shimon didn't feel bad yet? So you could say that it's mutar l'shanos mipnei ha-shalom. It's permitted to bend the truth for shalom. And here he's trying to make shalom. You could say that. But it seems to me that it's a little deeper than that. And that is that Aaron was saying what he knew to be the truth. That he knew that really Reuven and Shimon don't want to be in a fight. They don't want to be in a fight. Nobody wants to be in a fight. Everybody, we kind of get caught up with ourselves and we dig in our heels. It becomes personal. It becomes an ego thing and we end up losing ourselves and we have to be right. But we really don't want to be in a fight. And that's really what Aaron was saying. No, he doesn't want to be in a fight. He really does feel bad. He just doesn't, maybe it's not on the surface yet. I have to talk to him. But once I talk to him, he's going to feel bad. He does feel bad. It's in there. Every Jew does not want to be in a fight with any other Jew. And therefore, Aaron would just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it until he brought shalom between them, which is also a form of rabim heshiv me'avon, that he took them away from sins. Remember that anytime there's a fight, there are typically many averos that go along with the fight, from lashon hara to motzi shemra, to maybe even other things that could be averos, and Aaron would bring them away from their averos by being so persistent about getting them away from their fight. Kisif se kohen yishmeru das, for the lips of the kohen they protect das, they protect the knowledge. Here it means knowledge of Hashem. V'sora yevakshu mipihu, and they seek Torah from his mouth. Ki malach Hashem tzvokos hu, because he is like an angel of Hashem. The Kohen is like the angel of Hashem. This is the last pasuk of this week's Haftorah. It's going to end with this pasuk. And we'll talk about this pasuk in a moment. Before we do so, I want to mention to you that these two pasukim, pasuk Vav and pasuk Zayin, verse 6 and verse 7, the Medrash says, this was the hesped, this was the eulogy that Hashem said about Aaron HaKohen. When Aaron died, if you'll recall, they went up the mountain, they went up to Hor HaHor, Moshe and Aaron and Elazar, and only Moshe and Elazar came down. The people didn't see Aaron die. So when they came down, they asked Moshe, where is Aaron? Aaron said that, and Moshe said he died, and the people didn't believe him. They said, how could it be? Aaron was able to fight the Malach HaMaves. He was able to stop the angel of death. How could he be killed? So Hashem showed Aaron in heaven on a coffin to show the people that he had in fact died. But when he did that, the Medrash says that Hashem said a hesped. He said a eulogy for Aaron. And these psukim were the hesped for Aaron. This was the eulogy right here. These two psukim. There's a famous Gemara, which is repeated several times in Shas, that says that when it says that Besora Yevakshu Mipiu, that you should seek Torah from his mouth, Ki Malach Hashem Tzvokos Hu, because he is an angel of Hashem, the Gemara tells us that Im harav dome lemalach Hashem tzvakos, if the Rebbe is similar to a malach of Hashem, then yevakshu Torah mipihu, then you should seek Torah from his mouth. And if not, then al yevakshu Torah mipihu, then do not seek Torah from his mouth. The Gemara says that in order to seek Torah from the mouth of the Rebbe needs to be similar to a malach of Hashem. There are many explanations given for what this means. What does it mean he should be like a malach of Hashem? But just to give you an example of where the Gemara applies this, you may be familiar with the story, the unfortunate story of Acher. Acher is a figure in the Gemara. Acher was, his original name was Rebbe Elisha ben Avuya. Rebbe Elisha ben Avuya was one of the Tanaim, and unfortunately, through a series of incidents, he ended up giving up Torah, giving up mitzvos. He went off the derech. But he was brilliant, and he knew a lot of Torah, even though he had gone off the derech. His primary Talmud, his primary student, was Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says Rabbi Meir would learn Torah from him even after he went off the derech. So the Gemara in Maseches Chagiga asks the question based on this pasuk over here, Rabbi Meir, how could you learn from Acher? How could you learn from him? The pasuk here says only if the Rebbe is dome la malach Hashem tzvakos, only if he's like a malach, then you could learn from him. Otherwise you can't. So the application of the Gemara sounds like that the pasuk over here is saying the Rebbe has to be a tzaddik. He has to be like an angel. He has to be a tzaddik. If he's not a tzaddik, you can't learn from him. That's what it sounds like the Gemara is saying over there. Now over there, the Gemara answers that it was different with Rabbi Meir because of his stature. Rabbi Meir was so great himself. He was able to, the Gemara likens it to a person who's eating a fruit and spitting out the pits. That he was able to separate what was acceptable from what was unacceptable from Acher. Most people were unable to do that, but Rabbi Meir could because of his stature. That's a special thing about Rabbi Meir. But you see from the way the Gemara is using this pasuk that the comparison to a malach would be that he's a tzaddik. There are, again, other explanations. I will add one more I heard from several places, but I believe I originally heard it from my Rosh Shiva from Rav Weinberg's Zichrono Livracha, and that is that a malach is a messenger, an agent of Hashem. That's what the malach is. He's an agent of Hashem. So a malach does not have any free will. And a malach just does whatever it is Hashem tells him to do. Does precisely what Hashem says. So a Rebbe to be like a Malach Hashem Tzvakos means that he is giving over the Torah precisely as it is, as he received it. He doesn't have ulterior motives or his own agenda in giving over the Torah that he's giving. He's like a Malach Hashem Tzvakos, precisely the way the Torah was given to him, that's the way he's transmitting it to the next generation. If the Rebbe is like a Malach in that sense, you should learn from him. But if he has an agenda, if he is not faithfully transmitting the Mesorah the way it was given to him, then one should not learn from that person. That person is not fit to be a Rebbe. That is another explanation for this Pasuk. Okay, that brings us to Pasuk Ches, verse 8. I want to remind everybody who is online to please put your screens on. That would be in the bottom left corner. If your screen is off, the bottom left corner, you can click on it and there's a video, picture, and that'll turn your video on. And there are, besides the people who are online, there are now 3 people online. There are also 2 people in the room here with me. So, just so you all know, there are more than just what you see on your screen or what you see in person. Okay, Pasuk has, yes.
Can I ask you, yes. I just thought I'd mention that, that Pasuk Zion, I just happened to find it when I was looking up Torah after my husband passed away. So I put that, not the Malach Hashem, but the first part of the Pasuk I put on his Vaseva.
Oh, beautiful. They're beautiful. Beautiful. Okay, so Mrs. Schwartz saying her husband was a Kohen. And so you put that, and as we just mentioned, that Pasuk is part of the Hesped for Aaron himself.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
What's the, maybe it was mentioned, but it went over my head. So why is this a Haftorah for Toldos?
Oh, so that really goes back to the beginning. It starts in the first parak. The Haftorah of Toldos starts.
The beginning of the first parak is that Haftorah, okay.
Right, and the first parak starts with with how Hashem despises Esav and loves Yaakov.
Ah, okay.
And that's why it's there. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. So now, but this was all what Hashem would like the Kohanim to do to get back to where they should be, but unfortunately, they were not. So, the Pasuk says, V'atem sartem min haderech, you have unfortunately, you strayed from the road, hichshaltem rabim batorah, you have caused many to stumble in Torah, shichatem bris halevi, you have destroyed or gone away from the covenant of Levi, amar Hashem Tzvako, says Hashem. V'gam anina sati eschem nivzim u'shvalim l'chol ha'am, and therefore, says Hashem, I have made you low and despised to all the nations, meaning the nations of the world despise you for this reason. Because you do not guard my ways, v'nosim panim batorah, and not only that, but you are nosim panim batorah. Nosim panim batorah means that they use the Torah for their own gain. They which means that they expound upon the Torah in ways that are untrue, but that support whatever it is that they would like to say. That's a terrible thing to do, to be unfaithful to how to explain the Torah deliberately in order to justify a person's position. And unfortunately, we see it going on today frequently that people do that, and that is really a terrible thing. The Mishnah says in Maseches Sanhedrin that Megala Panim Batara Shalom Kahalacha, someone who does that ain lo chelik l'alam haba, loses his portion of the world to come. It's a pretty serious offense to do that. There is a positive a silver lining in this pasuk. The Medrash says when it says nivzim ushvalim, then Hashem says I've made you lowly and despised amongst the nations of the world. Chazal tell us there is a positive in that, in which that because of that, when we were in Galus or are in Galus in various places, the non-Jews don't see us as people that they would want to put in lofty positions. Why is that good, that they don't want to put us in lofty positions? Because very often those lofty positions put a Jew in an untenable position. Because it puts a Jew in a place where he's pitted against his own people. Where he's forced to be dealing with whatever authority is in charge, and that authority might want him to do things that are not consistent with helping his own people, and he can be really in a tough place. So we'd rather not be appointed to high office when we are in Gaulis. Now, there are exceptions to this. We know that in Gaulis, Bavel, and then in Paras and Madai, we know that Daniel was appointed to high office. He was the second in command in many successive governments. That was a special exception because Daniel was a descendant of David HaMelech, and he was acting from Hashem, you know, from Hashem's standpoint, he was acting as the Malchus, as the royalty Bigalusa in exile. He was the Jewish royalty in exile until Nehemiah is born, and then he, of course, helps to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and Nehemiah is really the heir to the throne because he's the son of Yechaniah, who was the last king, so second to last king actually. So, but until then, Daniel acts as the Malchus in Gaulis, as the kingdom in Gaulis of the Jewish people. But by and large, it's not a position that's easy, and we'd rather not be appointed to high office when we're in Gaulis because it's just a very difficult place to be. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Halo av echad l'chulanu. We all have one father, meaning Hashem. Halo kel echad bira'anu. One Hashem created us. Madua nivgad ish bi'achiv. Why does each man rebel against his brother? Lechalel bris avosenu, to profane the covenant of our ancestors. Why should we have so much infighting when we all come from the same place? We're all part of the same nation. Bagda Yehuda, Yehuda has rebelled. V'soeva nes savi Yisrael v'yushalayim, and abomination has been done amongst the Jews and in Yerushalayim. Ki chilel Yehuda kodesh Hashem, because Yehuda has profaned the sanctity of the people of Hashem, asher ahev, that he loved. U'baal bas el nechar, and he has, now Baal literally means has molested, but it can also mean has become close to Bas El Nechar, the daughter of the foreign god of Avodah Zarah. The Gemara tells us that here we have several averos that are being highlighted. I'm going to go back and read this pasuk, now correlating them to the averos that they are referring to. Bagda Yehuda, Yehuda has rebelled, says the Gemara, that's referring to Avodah Zarah, that they have worshipped idolatry. V'soeva nes sabi Yisrael of Yerushalayim, and abomination has been done amongst the Jews and in Yerushalayim, is referring to Mishkav Zachar, that is referring to homosexuality. That's why it says abomination. Ki chilel Yehuda kodesh Hashem asher ahev, for Yehuda has profaned the sanctified ones of Hashem that he loved, says the Gemara. This is referring to znus, to going to a zona, that would be to be involved with prostitution. Ubal bas el nechar, and he has molested or has had a relationship with the daughter of a foreign god. This is referring to Jews who have a relationship with non-Jews. Those who have a physical relationship with a non-Jew, that this is what it's referring to. And the Gemara says this last one, Baal Bas El Nechar, it doesn't say that he had a relationship with the daughter of a non-Jew. It says had a relationship with the daughter of the foreign god. So the Gemara says anybody who has a relationship with a non-Jew, it is as if they have become a mechutin. Mechutin is a hard word to translate. We know it's a word that we use. There's no good translation for it. The mechutin always means the parents, the respective parents of the chasan and kala. The chasan's parents and the kala's parents are called mechutanim. So colloquially, mechutin just means a familial relationship. So a person who has a physical relationship with a non-Jew, it is like they have become family with Avodah Zarah, with the El Nechar, with the foreign god. It's like they've become mechutin with the Avodah Zarah, with the foreign god. So these Averos, again, they are Avodah Zarah, homosexuality, prostitution, and being involved with a non-Jew. What happens with all those Averos? Pasuk Yud-Beis, verse 12, Yachres Hashem lo'ish asher ya'asena er ve'oneh. That Hashem will cut off for the person who does these Averos, er ve'oneh. The er means to be like sharp, and oneh means someone who can answer, who can speak. The person will, in other words, will not be able to carry, to be, the person will not be, will lose importance. May ahalei Yaakov from the tents of Yaakov, umagish mincha la Hashem tzvakos, and from those who bring gifts to Hashem tzvakos. So the Gemara says, if he is a Talmud Chacham, if he is a Torah scholar and he does any of these averos, then he will not be have heir b'talmidim va'one b'chachamim. He will not be able to carry on in learning. He won't be able to have a conversation in Torah with other Talmidei Chacham. He will lose the ability to have a give and take with other Torah scholars. And if he is a Kohen, he will lose his right to be Magish Mincha, to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. That is the punishment for someone who is involved in any of these Averos. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Vizos Shenis Tasu. And this is the second thing that you do. So far we've talked about the general lack of care in the Beis HaMikdash, and then these terrible Averos. But says Hashem, that's all just the first thing that everybody's doing. But there's a worse thing that everybody's doing, which is this second thing we're going to talk about now. Kasos Dima Es Mizbach Hashem, covered with tears, the altar of Hashem, Bechi V'Anaka, wailing and groaning, Me'ein Od Pinos El HaMincha, that no longer will I guess it means Hashem will no longer turn to the mincha, to the gifts, and no longer accept gifts from your hands. Hashem is not going to want to accept any of your karbanos because of something else that you're doing. Hashem is not going to want to accept karbanos. And you say, Alma, for what? What are we doing that's so bad? Al ki Hashem heyid beincha uvein eishes ni'urecha. Because Hashem has testified between you and the wife of your youth. Asher atapa ganatapa, that you have rebelled against her. V'hi chavertucha ve'eishes brisecha, and she is your friend and the wife of your covenant. The Medrash explains that this is referring to what happened, unfortunately, frequently throughout the Golos of Bavel. We know that when Ezra took the people out of Golos Bavel, out of the 70 years of being in Bavel, we know that there was a problem with marriages that were inappropriate. Many people were married inappropriately. Kohanim were married to women that they should not be married to, and also non-Kohanim were married to people they should not be married to. They were either married to Mamzerim, or to non-Jews, or whatever it was, or to slaves, Avadim. There were marriages that were prohibited, that were rampant amongst the Jewish people. Ezra, one of his great legacies is that he made everybody give up those illicit marriages, and he separated out those who were born from illicit marriages and arranged the Jews so that the yichus of the Jewish people could continue properly, the lineage of the Jewish people could continue properly. The Gemara Maseches Kiddushin goes through all the steps that Ezra took, which are really remarkable what he did. Not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to break people up. They need to be broken up. But he did it. But it was a big problem. one of the reasons why it happened, it wasn't just that people just went to non-Jews or whatever it is, but one of the reasons why it happened is because while in Galus, it was very hard. Life was very, very hard. The Jews did not have an easy time when we were in exile. Baruch Hashem, we live in a very unusual Galus here in the United States in 2020. We live in a Galus that has been benevolent to us for a very long time. And we live a Kenai Nahara, a relatively comfortable lifestyle. And the whole world lives a relatively comfortable lifestyle, but we do too. And Galus, though, was often very hard and harsh. One of the unfortunate consequences of a harsh and hard Galus is poverty. And poverty leads to lack of care for one's own self. And therefore, the people looked haggard. The people did not look good. There was a general, which happens, unfortunately, there's a Gemara that says that there was a woman who her husband didn't want to have anything to do with her, and Rabbi Yishmael became aware of it, and Rabbi Yishmael had the women of his household take her into their household, and they bathed her, and they clothed her, and they gave her all kinds of tachshitin, makeup, and jewelry, whatever. And then he presented her back to her husband, and he said to him, "Is this the person you don't have anything to do with?" And he said, "No, of course not. If I would have only known." So he had taken an oath against her, and then that removed the oath from him. So Rabbi Yishmael cried, and he said, "Benos Yisrael Yafos Hein." He said, the Jewish girls are beautiful, but it's the poverty that takes away their beauty because of the intense poverty that went on in Galus Bavel. So what happened is that there were men who had been married for a number of years, and it was the wife of their youth, but because of the harshness of the Galus of the exile, her beauty was lost. And then he would go to a non-Jewish woman. And that was apparently a regular occurrence. So that is being mentioned specifically here in the Pasuk, that Hashem says, "Why am I no longer going to accept your karbonos? Because you have rebelled against the wife of your youth, and she is your chaver, your friend, and she is the wife of your covenant." And it is from here the Gemara says that kol megarish ishto rishona, anybody who divorces his first wife, afilu mizbeach morid love the most, even the mizbeach, even the altar cries. And that is a reference to Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, when it talks about the altar of Hashem and crying and wailing. Pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15. V'lo echad asa, and didn't I only make one, says Hashem, I only made Adam Harishon, that's all I created. U'sha'ar ruach lo, and everybody else comes from him. U'ma ha'echad mivakesh zera Elokim, and there's different ways of translating this, and what does the one seek, the Zera Elokim? So again, there's a little bit of a disjointed way of translating it. Rashi has struggles over here with how to read this, but one approach is that, what does the one want? What does this wife who has been abandoned, what does she want? She's mevakesh zera elokim. All she wants is children of Hashem. That's all she wants. She's not interested in anything else. And this man has abandoned her. Even though Hashem really created everybody from one, from Adam, and yet he has abandoned her and left her for something else. V'nishmartem beruchachem uve'eshes nurecha al yivgo. Then you should guard your ruach, your spirit, and the wife of your youth do not rebel against. Ki sanei shalach. Because if one hates, one sends away. So what does that mean? Ki sanei shalach. The Gemara in Maseches Gittin says it means two things. It means that if the woman is hated, then she should be sent away. What does it mean a woman is hated? If she has behaved improperly, if she has acted in a promiscuous manner, then, which is obviously wrong, then she should be sent away. Then it is appropriate to divorce her. But if not, says the Gemara, ki sanei shalach, the one who sends away is sanei, is hated. If the woman has behaved in a hateful manner, she's been promiscuous, then she should be sent away. But a man who sends away his wife for a poor reason, then sonoi hamishaleach, the one who sends away is hated from Hashem. Amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, says Hashem, the God of Israel, v'chisa chamas al levusho, and chamas, which is theft, covers his clothing. Amar Hashem Tzvako, says Hashem, and he says again, v'nishmartem beruchachem, guard your spirit, v'losiv godu, do not rebel. Hogatem Hashem v'divreichem, you have cause toil for Hashem with your words. Obviously, Hashem doesn't have any toil. There's no effort for whatever Hashem does. But this means that you've made it that Hashem has done what He didn't want to do, which is to punish. V'amartem, you say, "Bama hoganu, how have we caused toil?" So the answer is, "Be'amarcham," when you say, "Kol oser ra tov b'nei Hashem, all who do evil are good in the eyes of Hashem." Uvahem uchavetz, and those are the ones that Hashem desires. Either you say that, O Aye Elokei HaMishpat, or you say, where is the God of justice? Because the people had gone so long in Galus, then they were saying that Hashem is not doing justice, He is not punishing the evildoers, He is not rewarding those who are tzaddikim, and therefore they would say one of two things. Either they would say that the people who do evil are good in the eyes of Hashem, and those are the ones Hashem really desires. Or they would say, Hashem has disappeared. He's no longer involved. Where is the God of justice? One of those two things. Okay. Now, really, even though this is the end of the perek, the prakam are somewhat arbitrary, and the conversation continues. We're going to stop here, though, and continue it next week. But I do want to point out something which you may have thought of, which is the following. That after this whole discussion of how Hashem wants to have the Kohanim go back to their proper covenant, and Hashem wants them to do the right thing, but they're not, and then this whole list of Averos that people are doing, and then finally he says, but worst of all, is this forsaking the wife of one's youth. Now, I recognize that's a bad thing. I mean, it's like, you know, she didn't do anything wrong. He's stabbing her in the back. It's a terrible thing. But we're competing with some pretty bad averos that were mentioned before. There are pretty bad things that were mentioned before. There was the mention of Avodah Zarah, the mention of homosexuality. I mean, there's really bad things that we're talking about before. So, and then this is supposed to be worse than all of that. Now, this is also a bein adam lachavero. This is not just bein adam lamakom. The first ones were between us and Hashem. This also involves another person, and it's hurting the other person. So that is a good explanation. It also flies in the face of what the Kohanim are supposed to stand for, which is shalom. And this would undermine shalom. But there's a deeper point over here, which is the following. We know that relationships between men and women are meant to reflect the ultimate relationship between us and Hashem. We know from Shir HaShirim that the relationship we share with Hashem, in that relationship, Hashem is the man and we are the woman. And there is a common analogy, which is in the Chumash itself, that whenever the Jews go off to Avodah Zarah, when they go off to idolatry, Chas V'Shalom, it is considered to be like znus. It's considered to be like adultery, like a woman going to another man. That's what it's, that is the analogy given in the Chumash itself, and it's carried through the Nevi'im. Now here, we're not talking about the woman going to another man, we're talking about a man, the husband, going to another woman. Now, a husband is allowed to have two wives, so that's not in and of itself a rebellion against his wife, to take a second wife. But when that second wife is a non-Jew, then that is a rebellion against his first wife. And that's what it's talking about over here, that there is a rebellion. So here, rather than discussing the woman going off to another man, we're discussing a man rebelling against his wife. So that doesn't fit with the relationship between us and Hashem, where we are the woman in the relationship. And normally, when we talk about Jews worshiping Avodah Zarah, that's where we talk about an analogy to adultery, of the woman going to another man. So that doesn't fit with what's happening over here. But remember, the issue over here is the Kohanim forsaking their covenant and not behaving properly. Well, when the Kohanim forsake their covenant, there are two things that happen. First of all, they're forsaking their covenant with Hashem. Hashem made a covenant with the Kohanim, and they are breaking away from that covenant. That's terrible. But they're also forsaking the covenant they have with the Jewish people. The only way that we are able to serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash is through the Kohanim. They are our agents. Shluchei d'Rachmana, they are our agents in the way that we are able to function in the Beis HaMikdash is through the Kohanim. So if the Kohanim break their covenant, it's not just they're breaking covenant with Hashem, they're also breaking their covenant with us. With us, because they are the ones who do the service on our behalf. In that picture, they are like a man who has turned his back on the wife of his youth and gone off to somebody else, gone off to a non-Jew. Now they're not going to a non-Jew. What they're doing is they're taking stolen animals for the karban. They are doing averos themselves. But the point is, they're behaving in a manner that Hashem rejects our karbanos, because the Kohanim are the only ones through which we can bring a karban. So Hashem rejects our karbanos because of their behavior. So what they are doing is they are causing that Hashem, who is the, so to speak, the man in the relationship, will no longer accept our karbanos. The Kohanim are kivyachol, so to speak, pushing Hashem away from us in our relationship. We're not going away. We're not going to Avodah Zarah and committing adultery. Hashem is rejecting our gifts. He's going away. But it's not because of Hashem decided to. It's because the Kohanim have undermined that covenant. So this comes full circle and fits into what is going on over here. One last point before we break, and if anybody has any questions, we'll take them as well. But one last point is that the Kohanim are the keepers of Shalom, of peace. That starts with Aaron, and that's the Kohanim's job. It is a striking thing that the Kohanim are the keepers of Shalom, because we know that the way that Pinchas achieved the bris of Shalom, the covenant of Shalom, was by a violent act. He killed Cosby and Zimri, and that's how he achieved the bris of Shalom. Because Shalom, so one could ask, it doesn't seem to work. I mean, Shalom seems to be, you know, everything's got to be peaceful. But we know that Shalom doesn't mean to just be nice to everybody and everybody's your friend. That's not the way it works, because people who are really behaving in an evil manner, if they will not come around, then they are a bad influence. They're not just a bad influence, they're hurting the world, because their behavior is dragging the world down. So it's rare, but there are occasions where someone has to take a stand. And the Kohanim are the ones that take the stand. They take a stand sometimes. Pinchas took a stand when he was supposed to take a stand. And the result of that was shalom. Because it brings Hashem into the world. And Hashem is shalom. Hashem is Adon HaShalom. He's the master of peace. His name is peace. And when Hashem is brought into the world, then there's greater shalom. And so the Kohanim are the ones who are, so to speak, the bringers of shalom. They primarily do that the way Aaron did it, which is Ohev Shalom, loving peace, Verodev Shalom, and chasing after peace. But sometimes that shalom is achieved through taking a stand, and that stand may be very unpopular. The Levim did it at the Egel Hazav as well. They did it at the Golden Calf. There, that they didn't go around hugging everybody and loving everybody. They killed people in that situation. That was bringing shalom into the world, into the Jewish people. Because there, someone had to take a stand. And when no one takes a stand, the Kohanim are expected to be the ones to stand up and take that stand. And that's also a bringing of shalom into the world. Any questions? Okay, yeah.
The people who were losing out on the korbanos because Hashem wasn't accepting them because of the behavior of the Kohanim would gang up against them and say, you have to do this.
Yeah, it's hard to do.
It's like, right.
But if it's so organized, it's not always so organized. Yeah. You know, right. Okay, I think the system worked. Okay, we shut this off one second.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.